All right, just about there. We have two more to go here. Thomas Lund is a our next speaker is a Dane, but actually went to elementary school in Shorewood Hills, Madison, here in Madison. He started his professional life in audio engineering and playing music. After studying medicine and perception at Aarhus University, he joined TC Electronic in 1997, becoming among the first to document the loudness wars in music. Thomas has published more than 40 papers and contributed to audio standardization within AES, ITUR, EBU, Cinelec, and the ATSC. Thomas is CTO, Broadcast and Production at TC Electronic. He's primarily working with specialization, perceptual measurements, and hearing loss prevention. And as soon as we get the mic on him here, we'll bring him up. All right, Thomas.
Thanks a lot. I just need a few seconds to set this up.
Yeah.
Give me a few seconds to set up my old Mac here. And I probably need to connect some audio as well, I guess. Even though it's a bit reverberant in here, isn't it? So let's take the... Oh, that is VGA. You want VGA? You sure it's not DVI? This would be DVI.
DVI, so you have...
I have VGA as well, if you prefer that.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. The picture won't be as pretty with VGA, but...
Yes.
But it will probably work. Okay, we'll try.
All right.
Okay, we have a picture. And it's about the right size, and I think you can see the colors as well, so I'll just check the audio briefly. So I'll play a little bit, just reference audio, and when it's set, I know it's very reverberant in here for the audio engineer, just please let it stay where it is, because the levels will be going up and down, and that's on purpose. But I'll play a little bit of this, and it's music, so don't be... It's rock music. So I hope I won't wake you up too much.
I'm gonna ride on. Ride on.
That's probably a little bit... I think we're overloading the input. Should we try again? You brought it down? Okay. Do you want it again? Yeah. Do you want a bit more? Okay.
I'm gonna ride on. Ride on.
Okay, that's good enough, I think. Thank you. So, I just came from LA a couple of, yesterday evening, talking about the same topic, loudness versus speech normalization for drama and film when it's used in broadcast. So just a little first, an intro ahead of that topic, because I had the pleasure of speaking here a couple of years ago, so I don't want to repeat myself too much. But just a little intro on what this loudness normalization is all about. We are used to having peak level metering in different kinds in broadcast. We have them in Pro Tools and in all sorts of editors and on digital consoles. It could be quarter or quasi-peak meters, it could be sample peak meters, but they're all reading peak to some extent. And peak is not really what we're after when we're interested in loudness and balance in one program against another one. So for instance, let's consider these two broadcast programs. They have, if you look at the left meter up here, they have the same peak level more or less, but quite clearly the second one is louder than the first one. So just a brief example of this.
Pleading guilty? What kind of a strategy is that?
He'd only be pleading to manslaughter.
It's still 10 years in prison.
Well, which is better than life. And that's what Mike's risking if he goes to trial. With good behavior, he could be out in 5.
With a better lawyer, he'd be out in 0. We need to find a lawyer who believes that he's innocent.
The evidence against him is very compelling. You're letting your feelings for him cloud your judgment.
100% Geschmack aus 100% reinem Hartweizen. Das sind 100%ig Zabler Hochzeitnudeln. Diesen Hochzeitnudeln.
Okay, so you could hear the difference between those two. But could we bring up the audio just like 3 or 6 dB or something like that? I have a music example also of the same. So here comes the music example. The same thing again. The first track, Donald Fagen, with a relatively high peak to loudness ratio, so it's quite soft compared to the second track. Okay, I'll spare you for more of Kelly Clarkson, but this is actually the CD sound. This is directly off the CD. So that's a little bit depressing that we have had these level regulations that have favored this kind of music. And of course, people are more than welcome to use compressors and limiters, but they shouldn't use them just to be loud. So that's what a lot of this work has been about. So. I think since I was here last time, there was this interesting study made in Austria of the 10,000 most popular music tracks from UK, US, and Germany since 51. So this is the average now peak to loudness ratio of the most popular music tracks. So remember that a low peak to loudness ratio, typically that's on the red side of the scale down here, that would translate to a poor audio quality, while a higher peak to loudness ratio has a chance of sounding better. So this is how the developments were from beginning of the 50s until the mid 80s, so generally on an upward trend. But since then it's gone the wrong way, and we have reached the lowest point. It looks that way a little bit. Let's hope that. But the problem now is that productions or tracks below this line, they very rarely can sound good on fine speakers. It probably doesn't make a big difference if you're just listening to your Mac or to tiny speakers. But if you have good speakers and invested in a good system, then it's a pity, of course, that the source quality has been destroyed on the average. Now, in broadcast, we have a bit of responsibility also, because if we have a distribution path that only has maybe 11 dB of headroom, then we can't appreciate these tracks up here, at least not to their full extent. And FM radio today typically has this amount of headroom. We had a bit of a discussion at AES also with some of the FM processing guys, because of course they defended these principles of having a very low headroom during transmission, but it affects production also. That's the sad part. And it's now even come to an extent where tracks are being remastered to be louder. So again, this is from a presentation I did at AES. This was an example from Graceland, the Paul Simon album. That's the original release from 86. And maybe you can see here that I think it's got a peak to loudness ratio of around 19 or something like that. But if we then look at the... Oh, that wasn't on purpose. This is the remastered one from 2012, these are the two different versions. So you can see the new one is highly compressed compared to the original one, and the PLR has gone down. And if you listen to it on nice speakers, it's not nearly the same sound. So cling on to your old CDs because they're typically better than new ones. And again, it's the same principle driving this trend, and that's a tragedy, I think. So it would have been the same maybe if we had in the Renaissance, if Leonardo da Vinci would have said, no, I don't want to paint Mona Lisa like this, because she'd probably be viewed in a dark room, so we better paint her like that. Or maybe he would have said, no, there are far too many details, we'll print her like this instead. And then he would probably have come to the conclusion, why not combine it? We'll save space, and then that would have been Mona Lisa today. And that's the tragedy. I mean, Paul Simon, at least, we have the 86 version, and it's in the Library of Congress and everything now, so all fine, hopefully, in the original version. But it's still, it's a pity that we also have the Disgraceland album from 2012. Let me show you an example here of loudness normalization between two tracks. I don't know how much we will be able to appreciate the sound in here, but first we'll have a bit of, I call it the secret stereo recording of Bruce Swedeen. It's Count Basie from 59, and I spoke to him that he had actually hidden a second recorder below the table because the record people didn't want him to record stereo because nobody would want that, so he shouldn't waste his time on that. But he did, actually. And then he has been able to sync them quite well, so we can get a good stereo image today of an original performance by Count Basie. So this is then loudness normalized against a production from 2012. Actually a pretty nice track by Imagine Demons. Imagine Dragons, called Demons. But unfortunately, the sound isn't what it should have been, in my opinion, on that one. But you can be the judge yourself. So, but they are loudness normalized.
Let's just keep the public from knowing what is on my worried mind. Someday, babe, I'll be 6 feet in my grave. Someday, someday, baby, I will be 6 feet in my grave. Then I won't be around to be treated like a low-down, dirty slave. No, 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 baby. Oh, no.
Your eyes, they shine so bright. I wanna say that light. I can't escape this now unless you show me how. When you pull my ear, look into my eyes. It's when my demons hide. It's when my demons hide. Don't get too close. It's dark inside. It's when my demons hide. It's when my demons hide.
So I think that's also a tragedy, but of course, Imagine Dragons, they have much better technology at their disposal than Bruce Swedeen had, but they're not really, I would call it cognitive limitations rather than technical limitations. But, okay, let's move on, because also for, I did an address of the Danish Parliament last year where Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits was so kind to record a little piece, because I was trying to, you know, in Scandinavian countries, we have this, at least we have public broadcasters, and we want, I was promoting the idea of at least having some decent headroom, at least in some channels, making sure that where politicians could influence this, that there would be a quality audio channel for the population. So he recorded this little piece here.
Now we've reached a stage over the last 20 years, really, where there's no headroom left at all. a vicious circle has come about where clients and competing and record companies and engineers have got themselves into this loudness war, and this vicious circle has actually become a death spiral. There seems no really sane, no sane reason why it should exist. There's a need for an intelligent leveling standard, or like an international standard. And the more politicians who recognize this right across the scale, I think the better it will be. And I wish Thomas and everybody else, all the other good people who are involved in this and have been involved in it, every success. And then with any luck, modern music productions that we get here to listen to will start sounding good again.
Okay, so that's of course nice to have a backing like that, especially when, because when it's artist intention, then the politicians listen a bit more than if it's just a technicality or if they don't understand it. So, but what has happened is that we have moved away from this peak level world, or that's what we're doing, where we had systematic level differences between, for instance, hyper-compressed pop or commercials and ordinary programming or pop and folk music, things like that. So we have switched to this new paradigm where we can do loudness normalization around a certain value, in this case, minus 24 on a scale we call LUFS or LKFS. It's the same thing. So at AES, then we had this what we call war tribunals with good people from the recording industry like George Massenburg and Bob Ludwig and Susan Rogers. And of course there's a problem if it was just a question of audio files appreciating this, but that we're taking away artistic freedom from anyone, but we're not trying to do that. So for me, this slide was quite important this year. So what about compressors? Are they evil? And certainly not. So we did like this, and all of us sort of stood behind that message. It's not that we don't want compressors or limiters, we just want them to be taken into account. So when you do your final mastering, you can do it loudness normalized. So if you have a mastering with a lot of compression, then it should typically be reduced in level so its loudness is the same as the one with less compression. And then you can make an informed judgment which one is better. That's actually what's happening in iTunes also, because the moment soundcheck is turned on, which it is by default actually in iTunes Radio, which you might know, then all loudness, all programs or tracks revolve around minus 16 on this LUFS scale. So a track that's too loud will be brought down, a track that's too soft will be brought up. Only if a track has a very high request for headroom, a high peak to loudness ratio, it won't be able to play at its full loudness, but it will be reduced based on its peak level. But that's not typical of today's music. So most of today's music will be brought down and a few tracks will be brought up a bit. Okay, now let's get back to the original topic here, because this is actually about loudness versus speech normalization. One thing is to have music loudness normalized in a good way, but how do we cope with the wide loudness range content, for instance, drama and film? So I'll talk a bit about measurement uncertainties when we're using one of the two. I'll talk about the results from some studies I did with a colleague, and finally some conclusions, what implications that has for broadcast and cinema. Also, with future standards, at SEMTE, there was a lot of discussion, both a guy from Fraunhofer and a guy from Dolby was promoting their new systems with massive amounts of metadata and also new possibilities. But it seems when you have heard this, I think you'll realize that that even with the tiny bit of metadata we have today, the systems are not very robust. And so we would need much more robust systems in the future if we should be able to cope with the amounts of metadata that is suggested here. Okay, so how did we do these tests? We took, first of all, the films analyzed. We took 35 titles, the highest ones on the IMDb list, on their top 100 list from 1995 and onwards. So 35 titles from there, and we analyzed all of them with DRC forced off. Then we also recently added all episodes of season 3 Game of Thrones, and additional to the DVD rips, we also compared against when the same episodes were streamed in Scandinavia. We have HBO Nordic, so I would presume it compares to HBO in the US, but I'll get back to that. So these are the films we studied, just briefly going through the list. Most of them are American Hollywood productions, a few from Europe, a few from Japan. It's not that the titles are terribly important, it's more important that these are the most popular movies from the last 10 years or so, or 20 years. Then you might know we have now defined loudness on three timescales. There's a momentary loudness, this is international ITU standards. There's short-term loudness, 400 milliseconds, 3 seconds. I spoke about that last time. And then there's finally program loudness, which is an average from start to finish of a program. And this one uses a relative measurement gate as well. So for the rest of this talk, it will be exclusively about program loudness versus speech normalization. So forget about these two for the rest of the day. Program loudness, the way we measure it is we can input a mono stereo 5.1 signal, and then we have a way of extracting the power of that and combining the channels. Then there's a relative gate, so we disregard level that is, you could say, 10 dB approximately below the average level. Then it's counted as background noise and doesn't influence the measurement anymore. So that's the way program loudness is determined. But how do we actually measure speech? There could be many different ways of doing it. For instance, if we have a 5.1 signal, we could apply a speech discriminator to the center channel only, and then we could open for the measurement every time there was speech in the center channel. That's one possibility. Another one would be to downmix left, center, right, and apply again a speech classifier here and open for the measurement every time speech was detected. A third option would be to apply 5 parallel speech classifiers to all the channels and then have some rule by which we are opening for the measurement. Dolby in their DI system chose to do it this way, so that's the way I'll be talking mostly about today. They're downmixing left, center, right, applying a single classifier here and doing the gated integrated measure here. But you could argue now with the new loudness standards that they ought to do it this way at least, to have the speech classifier, but actually use the relative gate like it's now prescribed in BS 1770. Because if you wanted to measure speech manually, then you would now need to have a meter that that you could use without the gate, measurement gate, because this one is without the measurement gate. This just inputs speech directly. But I'll come back to that. I hope you understand these different methods. And none of them is more true than the other one. It's just a question of taking one of them. But it's not defined, as I said. Okay, so some results here. These are now the 35 movies here, and let me explain what the diagram shows. We have, for instance, you can see the first movie here. If we normalize that against the blue one here, loudness normalize it, you can see that the maximum peaks will be going up to around -8 or something like that. If we normalize it to speech level, the maximum peaks will be going up to maybe 0.5 or something like that. But you can see for the rest of the movies, you can see that the speech normalization would bring them into clipping zone here. So in this case, if we if we use minus 24 as our target, then you can see that speech normalization requires more headroom than loudness normalization. You can actually see that, for instance, a movie like this, there's a big difference if we're using loudness normalization or speech normalization. So a bit more than half the movies could actually be distributed or broadcast without any processing at all, just sitting at minus 24. Then we analyzed the variation of speech level in all of those movies. Again, we have the 35 movies here. They're actually sorted by loudness. So this one would be the loudest movie here using loudness measurement, and that one would be the softest. So you can see, and this would be the speech level in all of the movies. So you can see the speech level tip goes up a little bit as well as the loudness. That's what you can see here. But more importantly, you can see the average variation of loudness in speech in the movies is very high. This is 27 LU. That is, if you're a broadcaster, you would know this is an extreme variation of speech. You would never allow that in a broadcast program. As an example of what you could do in broadcast, this is a little snip of, I'll play you a little snip of the D-Day re-readings. BBC did an interesting experiment here last summer. It even had my kids listening to the rereads of the D-Day announcements because it was a good actor doing it and they liked him. And I talked to BBC later and they said this is not processed at all. He's just speaking his regular, he's a good actor and he speaks well. And you can see he ends up over a 2 minute segment with a very small loudness range of only 3.3 LU. But let's just listen to a little bit of this.
Here is the 8 o'clock news for today, Tuesday, the 6th of June. Supreme Allied Headquarters have issued an urgent warning to inhabitants of the enemy-occupied countries living near the coast. The warning said that a new phase in the Allied air offensive had begun. Shortly before this warning, the Germans reported that Havre, Calais, and Dunkirk were being heavily bombarded, and that German naval units were engaged with Allied landing craft. A new phase of the Allied air offensive has begun. This sentence opened what was described as an extremely important warning broadcast in our European service this morning by a member of the staff.
Okay, so you can see that even from the beginning, it just sets out with a loudness range of around 3, and it just stays there all the time. So this is, if you're a good actor, you can do this, and this is what you would expect in broadcast. Maybe not as finely read as this one, but at least to some extent comparable with this, and certainly not with a variation of 27 LU like you can tolerate in film. Then we also investigated the measured speech DI level against the dial norm of these movies. So you can see this is the speech level, that's the blue bar, and the red bars are the encoded dial norm data. So they ought to be the same, but you can clearly see they're not. And if you're a little bit into statistics, there's a thing called correlation coefficient that basically says how much the two are tied together. And zero means that they're random, that there's no connection at all. One means there's full connection, minus one means that there's an opposite full connection. So 0.13 is very disappointing. It's basically random. So these, the finest film places of the world, have not been able to enter just a single metadata parameter correctly. I think that's a little bit disappointing when we're talking about having thousands of metadata parameters in the future and having you guys produce those data. Maybe Dolby should make a little bit a simpler system. You also see that the minus 27 here is actually just, that's the default level. So some of it might be explained by people just leaving the default set. Okay, so the criteria for speech, this surprised us a bit because we wanted to find out how good the DI algorithm was as well, and if you could repeat the same measurements, and we sort of expected that. So if we did found some segments of the film that was clearly speech, then we would expect the measurement of that to be more or less in line with the DI measurement. So this is the criteria for doing that kind of segments. We would reject any segment in the movie if the foreground voice is not, if it's whispering or singing or shouting, or if there's a high competitive or loud competitive sound. However, there's no reason to reject a segment if it it has voice in the foreground, and we have wind, birds, things like that in the background. Also, background music is okay. So a segment that fulfills that criteria, we will call that a speech segment. And this is how it could look like in Pro Tools. This is a Batman movie here. And these are snips from that movie that fulfill the criteria of being speech segment. So we would call this a speech assembly of the movie, and we could measure that assembly, and then we would expect to get the same number as the automated system. So we did like this. We input these segments from a lot of movies into a system where we could measure loudness in many different ways. The only thing I'm reporting here today is a measurement based on the ungated BS-1770, which was the original one in A85 as well, and then the most recent one here. There are other ways that could be measured as well, but I won't talk more about that here today. But notice that the light blue one is the ungated one, and the dark blue one is the new and gated version. So now if we look at a number of these movies, I'll take 9 or 10 movies here, and we look at the ungated measurement of the speech segments. They would be like this. So you see that the speech level lies between, measured this way, between minus 34 and maybe minus 27 or something like that. If we use the new gated measurement, you'll see a systematic difference, which is to be expected because, as I said, the gated one disregards background sound. So it will typically and systematically show a little higher result. So you'll see that we have this difference of between 1 and 1.5 dB between the two measurements, but it's in the same direction always. However, if we do the automatic measurement now, not of the speech segments, but of the entire movie, then the results are quite different. So you can see here, there's very little correlation between the manual measurements and the automatic measurements. And finally, you can see that metadata here, again, is more or less random. So the automated measurement, you should notice that it's consequently higher than the manual measurement here. And we wanted to find out why that could be, because this was a surprise for us. The standards talk about tolerances of maybe 1 or 2 dB, so having differences of 8 or more dB was completely unexpected here. Then we did a test of the DI algorithm. One of our programmers hacked the algorithm, the original algorithm, so instead of doing measurement, it just passed the audio in two different ways. So every time the algorithm thought that this was speech, it opened the audio with 0 dB gain. Every time it thought it was not speech, it would attenuate the signal by 20 dB. This way, we had a chance of listening to what the algorithm was actually doing, and I will play that for you now. Every time we're in a green area, the algorithm thinks this is speech, that's okay. Every time it goes into the red zones here, it says, no, this doesn't fulfill the criteria. So now you be the judge of what kind of job the algorithm does on this particular segment.
And I am the devil.
You're not the devil. You're practice.
Ah!
Okay, so you can see a lot of fighting noise that clearly wasn't, at least not to me, was speech, is being measured as speech. And that can explain why DI systematically measures action movies much louder than speech, much louder than it actually is. Then in the measurement, because it's a power-based measurement, if you have loud sounds, they weigh more in the measurements than soft sounds. So even if you just have a few of these things happening per movie, they would still pull up the number quite a bit. Okay, so combining all this, what is the uncertainty now of measuring loudness versus speech if we just look at it from a technical point of view? On the measurement itself, there's on the algorithm, there's a 0.2 dB tolerance on the loudness measure. We have around 1.4, 1.5, 2 dB on speech, depending on if we're doing the gated or the ungated version. But additional to that, we have a classification uncertainty in speech, the one I just talked about. And finally, we have an uncertainty on the topology. That's how we define the channel topology I talked about in the beginning. And because all of these are independent, they may add up, and we can have an uncertainty of 14 dB or something like that in movies. Let me now turn to the other part of our study, the new ambitious types of TV drama. I'll play you a little segment of an episode of Game of Thrones, and notice there's a big variation here. We are trying to find out if this is comparable to feature films or if this is actually just a broadcast program. But notice that, you make up your mind again, but notice that there are elements here that actually ought to be heard. For instance, there's the sound of an owl. See if you can hear the owl, because it plays a role in the dialogue as well. But have a listen to this.
You hear me?
Yes.
Well, got anything to say?
I'm sorry he woke you up.
I don't care if you're sorry. Keep that baby quiet.
Oh, I will. Don't you ever touch him.
Little wildling bitch. You should have stayed with your own kind. You listen to me.
Shut your mouth.
What? It's just an owl, you dumb bitch.
No, it's not.
That's fairly ambitious. And of course, it's wonderful we have a broadcast system that can accommodate this now. Let's now look at the headroom requirements if we're using loudness normalization to see if Game of Thrones compares more to broadcast or to feature films. So this is pop music here, around 1,000 tracks, and you can see they require very little headroom in the distribution chain, maybe a typical 8 or 10 dB or something like that. Broadcast on the average requires maybe 15, 16, 17 dB when it's a good production. Here's Game of Thrones, the 10 episodes from season 3, and you can see they're quite tightly placed here between 20, minus 20, and minus 24. They require this type of headroom. And these are all the feature films at the 35 movies. So you can see Game of Thrones actually falls in the middle of the movies, so they're comparable to movies in that respect. We also looked at the loudness range of those Game of Thrones episodes, and these are typical pop loudness range tracks. These are typical broadcast programs here. Here we have Game of Thrones from 2013, and here we have typical feature films. So again, Game of Thrones is also on the film side with regards to loudness range. That loudness range measures the difference between the loud parts and the soft parts of a program on the average. So now let us just now turn to this thing about having different distribution channels. Do we have predictable distribution today? One of the ways of checking it is actually using this measurement, loudness range, which is standardized also. So for instance, if we are looking at a loudness range, measuring it along the signal path, we can measure it on the output of the mix, for instance. So if we measure an episode or a track or something like that to have a loudness range of 19.6 LU, then it should stay the same all the way to the consumer. Loudness range stays the same regardless if you're level normalizing or not. It only changes the moment you start processing. So it should ideally stay the same regardless if you're turning it up or down during the transmission. So maybe it is the same actually during the ingest stage, but then it goes down on the output of the transmission and is delivered that way to the home. That's one scenario. Another one would be that it again stays the same in ingest, stays the same in transmission, stays the same in distribution, and then is brought down at the home. A third one could be like this, that it's brought down the first time here and the second time here. And these are all typical scenarios, and they happened already. One example is, again, Game of Thrones. We wanted to find out, Game of Thrones, how predictable the delivery of those episodes are. So one way of doing it would be to take a DVD, rip the file, and force DRC to be off, and then we get a loudness range of 21.6 LU of a certain episode. If I'm measuring on my Mac digital output from the HBO Nordic stream, you can see I get the same result. But now if I take that DVD and play it on my Mac using the same Mac optical output, the loudness range has dropped to this. So systematically we have the sound quality is not the same here. HBO actually has a higher sound quality in this case than the DVD. And that's, again, this is one of the things we have to avoid in the future, this unpredictable behavior of codecs or the combined system, in this case, the AC3 system. And it will only get worse than the day we add thousands of extra metadata to that. So what's the implications for broadcast? I think we should go back to physiology and look at what we want as humans. It's always overall loudness that's the most important to us. It's the same in the cinema. We get annoyed if it's too loud, and it's also overall loudness that can make us deaf. So I'm in some of these committees in Europe and where we are discussing these things, and again, it's not speech level, it's overall loudness that's the important thing. Speech level isn't even second on the list because motivation is number two. Do we want to receive a verbal message or not? The third one is, do we understand the language or the dialect? The fourth one is then speech intelligibility. So this is actually what we want. This is what we mean with speech level. But looking from a statistical point of view, speech level is actually a confounder. So it's a variable, but it's not the variable we actually want. And this makes a big difference. Again, the film world is one thing, broadcast is another. The film world, they have their dialogue set in stone. They're doing all these this after synchronization, wonderful work with professional actors. You don't do that in broadcast. So in broadcast, speech level is less relevant because speech intelligibility may be low, even though speech level is high in broadcast. In film, there's a correlation between speech level and speech intelligibility because the intelligibility is always high. So that leads me to this slide that taking the measurement uncertainties into account, This is the scenario we have in today's television in the US. I'm not judging if it's good or bad. I'm just saying that you have a lot of tolerance measuring normal programs because this is speech-based. Then you have a very tight tolerance on commercials, and it's even more so if we transmit drama or film. Interstitials are under tight control, but the rest is more or less unenforceable. So it's really a rubber band measurement. And the anchor concept, of course, even adds more slack because you can always discuss if it was actually speech you were supposed to measure in the program. There's also an upside to that for the broadcaster because you can't be held accountable for the level of regular programming. That's basically it, because there's no such thing as speech level. There's so much tolerance that nobody can enforce it. And there are so many ambiguities that, as I said, and I'm not evaluating if it's good or bad. It might actually be a clever thing because it's close to what the UK did until recently. They used what was called the BCAP rules only to control the commercials and then hope everything else would fall into place. And that actually took care of more than 50% of the complaints about audio in the UK. So it certainly is a way to go. You should just realize what is going on. Now, let me just say a few words about mobile, because you were talking about that earlier today. So how do we ideally handle audio in mobile and streaming? So this is our normal program sitting at minus 24. Then I suggest a good way of doing it is just to take the top 60 dB limiting at the top, and then bump up the level static gain by 8 dB. Then we end up at minus 1, which every codec can cope with. And the good thing about this is that the core area of the audio is completely unaffected. As long as you're not going into this range up here, your audio will be exactly the same here as it is here, just 8 dB louder, which is what you need, because otherwise you risk that the mobile listener won't be able to hear it. Finally, some conclusions. That speech level is better than peak normalization, but not so relevant in radio, that it wastes headroom, and there's a lot of measurement uncertainty. The patent-restricted algorithm should be improved. Loudness normalization, it's difficult to find examples where it doesn't give good normalization. It protects the headroom, and it's well-defined and has a low uncertainty. It's an open standard. So moving forward, for instance, on the new or the ITU standard or international program exchange, it should use loudness as the default. So the focus should be on production practice and to have this transparent distribution, then everything else will be fine. So I'll leave you with a short example of broadcast in the 70s. Maybe this can wake those of you up that have fallen asleep.
Coming!
Trouble at mill.
Oh, no. What sort of trouble?
One on crossbeam's gone out of skew on treadle.
Pardon?
One on crossbeam's gone out of skew on treadle.
I don't understand what you're saying.
One of the crossbeams has gone out of skew on the treadle.
What on earth does that mean?
I don't know. Mr. Wentworth just told me to come in here and say that there was trouble at the mill, that's all. I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Our chief weapon is surprise. Surprise and fear. Fear and surprise are two weapons. Our fear and surprise and ruthless efficiency are three weapons. Our fear and surprise and ruthless efficiency and an almost fanatical devotion to the Pope are four. No.
You remember that? And of course, this was funny back then and it's funny now, and I'm sure it will be funny 30 years from now, and it's just in mono. So there's no particular, in this case, reason to have very high audio quality or something, or even a very high loudness range. It's wonderful we have it in the new systems today, but let's not get carried away and put too many extra burdens on you as broadcasters, I would say. So with that, I will leave you and with a few references here. So thanks for listening. Thanks. If there are questions or comments, please feel free. I think if we have a few minutes.
Hello, Thomas. Steve Dove, Wheatstone. I love the example you use, Kelly Clarkson. It's my favorite too. You just stop it and take a snapshot, and there's going to be a bit of hard clipping in there wherever you stop it. It's marvelous. But my real question is tying together the electrical measurements, which we've all collectively been hammering on so hard for the last 10 years or so, with the playback, acoustic playback level. Now, Dial Norm was supposed to sort this all out, although you've very readily demonstrated it's more of an unnecessary complication and basically ignored at this point. How do you see us progressing to where the electrical measurements, which we're hoping to standardize on, minus 24, minus 16, translate into acoustical level, and how would you measure the acoustical level?
Yeah, that's a great question. Of course, there's no such thing as one level at the consumer. What we could predict is that the consumer would set his playback gain of the average level to be around maybe between 60 and 70 dB SPL. So that's probably the range the normal consumer would use for minus 24. So that would then give you at least a lot of extra loudness on top of that for a system which has the headroom. So I think we can safely say that for any home theater, if you're going from minus 24, which would maybe be for a home theater, 70 dB SPL, then you can actually go at least 20 dB above that with movies like, or drama like Game of Thrones, so you'd end up around 90 or something like that. So that's fairly predictable, I would say. When we look at playback on mobile devices, it's actually more difficult right now, and that's because in Europe we have some not very well thought out laws that tries to prevent hearing loss. That's all good, but the way they're doing it is pretty bad, because they're just limiting the amount of playback gain that's possible right now. So basically in Europe, we expect every program to sit maybe at minus 14 or something like that, and that's the gain restriction. It's based on that, and that's terrible, of course, because it forces the broadcasters to bring up the level much more than really should be necessary. So I've been, recently I joined Senelec, some work in the European standardization on this, to try to have regulation be based on those measurements in the mobiles rather than just an assumption of the program. And hopefully we can get that through, but until that happens, we're actually in the dark on mobile devices. So there, your question is even more relevant, I think. But again, right now with Dial Norm and this extra complexity, it actually only makes matters worse right now, not better.
Exactly. Thank you. Great presentation, Thomas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Please.
Right, I guess that's it.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.